Proverbs are proverbs and not precepts. I think if there's anything that I have profited in this study, I read that, I knew it, but I never heard it said that way. You know, a soft answer does not always turn away wrath. You know, somebody's angry with you and you give a soft answer, and they may come back at you even harder thinking you're a weakling or something. But a soft answer turns away wrath. You know why that's true? Because the opposite of it is almost always true. You know, a harsh answer, what's it going to do? It's going to stir up strife. And so you've got the other aspect of that proverb, and it's really interesting. But it's a principle by which you live. And we've pointed out, and I just say this again because of an appreciation of the fact that it's Solomon saying, "My son, my son, my son, my son," 16 times in the King James. I think more than 20 times in the New King James, he says, "My son." King James says sometimes, "My children," you know, but it's my son. And so here's Solomon, and he's talking to his son, trying to tell him how to live. Well, you know the name of any of his sons? I don't know how many he had, do you? You know, probably no telling if you've got how many wives. He had what? 700 wives, and as a little kid in Sunday school said, and 300 porcupines. And so I don't know how many children he might have had. It would have been astounding how many children he had. The Bible does talk about how much food was the daily provision for Solomon's at Solomon's house, at Solomon's in his house, and it's just amazing how much food they ate, and that probably indicates all kinds of servants and a whole lot of other things. It's not proof they'd had a lot of children, but I'm telling you, it's an important insight into some things. And here's the point I think that I would encourage you to at least consider and maybe implement them in your life. And I know most of us are beyond the age of having children. We got grandchildren, do we not? And we just need to understand. If I were a young parent and my children are beginning to say, "Why is this?" or "Why can we not do this?" or all of these other things, I would try to sit down with them, and I'd have to know the book of Proverbs, and say to them, "Let me tell you what God says about that." To me, that's got to be powerful. And that's turning over your children to the authority of God. And as they grow up and as they begin to assume their responsibility, I mean, a little child, 3 or 4 or 5 years of age, he loves God, man. That's all he knows. He really wants to make God happy in everything. And why would you not use the proverb? But the same thing of when he's 15, 16, 17 years of age, and he's trying to just push the boundaries out there to see, well, am I allowed to do this? Or why am I not allowed to do this? And to turn over, as the child matures, the responsibility of the moral side of his life to the children, over to God. Turn their moral responsibility over to God and help them to see, you know, these are the principles by which I live. And I live because they are from God. And so it's really, really important for us to think about. And so today we're going to talk about, we may go back, by the way, to speech. We hardly did justice last year or last Sunday, whenever, or 2 Sundays ago when we talked about our speech. We may go back to that. But there is an issue that's in the book of Proverbs that I think our society really, really needs to know. And that is to talk about wine and drinking. I think it's interesting. Here are some verses in the Bible that talk about the wisdom about wine and drinking. And my, oh my, has all of that become a part of our world and a part of the culture in which we live? And we need to be so very, very much aware of it. Let's look in Proverbs chapter 4. And verse 17 as beginning place. And it's in this section where repeatedly Solomon just keeps saying, "My son, my son, my son." And you've got that in chapter 4. You look how verse 1 starts. Look back at chapter 3, verse 1. 3:1 says, my son. 3:21 says, my son. 4:1 says, hear my children. And then in verse 20 of chapter 4, my son, give attention to my words, incline your ears to my sayings. To get to verse 17, the paragraph begins back in verse 14 to get a context when he says in verse 14, do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. For they do not sleep unless they've done evil, and their sleep is taken away unless they make someone fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. And I know that's a figurative use of it, but think about how often it is when there's drinking, there's all kinds of violence that goes on. I want you to think about incidences perhaps in your life or incidents in experiences that you may have had in relationship to family members or others, and that is violence. Where'd it come from? Drinking. You think about, you ever been at a football game and the ref made a wrong call? You understand what I'm talking about? I remember hearing an incident, and I was not there, though I wish I could have been then. Alabama was playing somebody, and Alabama made a touchdown, and the guy who was watching the game had one of these way back yonder when portable televisions really cost a lot, and I'm not talking about this size and everything. And he took that thing and was so disgusted he just threw that $1,000 television down and cracked that up and everything. Folks do that, do they not? Think about road rage. Think about wife abuse. Think about abuse of children. And just think about the fruit that is tied directly to drinking and violence. I'm not saying anything new, but it is interesting that Solomon, when he talks about the path that you can go down is a path you ought not to go down, he uses the word wine in relationship to that. Well, I don't spend a lot of time on this verse, but look over in chapter 20. Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 1. He says, wine is a mocker. Strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise. That's interesting. Our society does not believe this. Our society does not see wine in this. I'm talking about drinking in this respect. Our society doesn't. Drinking has become socially acceptable, and a meal is not a meal unless you've got wine to go with it. Isn't that remarkable? The menus. If you're going to have this kind of meal, this kind of pasta, this kind of whatever, here's a good wine that will go with this steak. Where's that coming from? Think about subliminally how much drinking there is on television. Subliminally. I don't know if they're still on the air. Who are those two women that come on the Today Show after the Today Show is over? When you think about it, what do you think about? What's in front of them? Over and over and over again. Every time. Wine is a mocker. We don't believe that. I don't see any harm in it. I really think that's what people say. I don't see any harm in it. You know, one drink's not going to hurt. You know, it's all right. And all of a sudden, that which somebody says, I don't see any harm in, there is an addiction that has been formed to drinking that is almost impossible to get rid of. Does not the Bible says, by their fruits you shall know them. You ever been in a restaurant and people are drinking and they get more than one drink and you think he's going to be driving on the way home? Not just him, but in our society, everyone is. When we have that New Year's get together, when we sing in the New Year, I don't know if you have the thoughts. I believe I have these thoughts every year on the way home. It's midnight. We're through here with the spiritual side. And I think, I'm going to get home before all these drunks get out here on the highway. Isn't that amazing? Wine is a mocker. And my, oh my, the folly of things that are happening in our society. You know, we grew up in a society, perhaps we're drinking, those of us who are older, grew up in a society where, you know, that kind of thing did not happen. But you walk into Walgreens, CVS, Costco, you know, what do you see? Isn't that amazing? The most prominent thing that is there. You and I need to have a realization of just how unbelievable this world has changed. The world that you and I grew up in, that world is has totally changed. And our young adults in the church, our young adults at Palm Beach Lakes, need to understand and to think soberly and to listen to Solomon as he talks about my son. I want to tell you something, son. Wine is a mocker, and wine will lead you astray. Well, not always. I can drink and it won't bother me. You want to talk about your children? You want to talk about your influence on others? Well, I can, you know, nobody knows that I drink. Now, wait a minute, where are you going to buy it? You're walking out of the store and you got something in your hand, except you got a big box of it. You understand what I'm talking about? You ask one some of the teenagers from the church to come over and babysit for a while. I'm talking about real life. I'm talking about real life experiences with teens talking to me and said, Brother Dan, I don't understand what I saw when I got over there in their house. That's the influence. And we contribute to it. We contribute to it. If I say the name Jim Leslie, that's Jeff's brother. Some of you will remember Jim. One of the things about Jim was he worked for Xerox and was a very, very successful person. And salesman of the month quite often. And so they'd get all of the salesmen together and they'd have a celebration. And they'd all have their glass for their champagne as a part of the celebration. They're going to fill up the glass. You know what Jeff did? Grabbed it and turned it upside down. No, I'm not going to have any of that. Why? Jeff saw some things that others did not see. And Jeff, I'll come back to you in a minute, Henry. Jeff would say, you'd go out for, I should have said Jim. Jim would go out to a dinner. He said, it's so amazing. Going around the table, the server says, could I get your drinks? Could I get your order for drinks? If the first person ordered alcohol of any kind, guess what everybody at the table did? They arrived at the point they didn't want them to start with Jim. You know why? Jim says, I'll have iced tea. There's influence that we have. And we need to understand the absolute reality. This is not theoretical. There are individuals who genetically have one drink and become addicted to drink. Wine's a mocker. That's not true of everyone. But you just start and think about the fact, what if that one child was your child? What if that one child was your grandchild? And genetically, scientifically, that person's life can be ruined. just by that one drink. Henry had a comment. Yes. And that's the way it's all. How are we going to handle this? Well, let's think about what Solomon says about it. This is a proverb from God. Drinking is mockery, and drinking will lead you astray. You want to ride on that Boeing 737 MAX? You got to fly it home. Did you guys fly down from Nashville or did you drive down? You know, you're flying back home on a 737 MAX, okay? What do you want to do? Well, it's okay. You know, won't harm me. You know, I think every one of us, if we were out at the airport and they said, we're going to Boeing 737, you got to make sure it's a 737 MAX and not something that predated that. And you've really got to come to a realization of that fact. You had a comment, okay?
What happens when somebody... You
got any tissue?
Right, Mark, there's nothing that enters the man from the outside but defile.
Yeah.
As an excuse for...
Yes. Well, I remember in New Zealand, you know, one of the... Can I get two of these? Couldn't have the whole bag, okay? If you got a nose this size and it starts running, you are in trouble, okay? But you stop and think about, and here I was in New Zealand, and this old boy from Alabama, sort of naive, I guess, you know? And one of the first people we met, Judy, I don't know if you remember them, but we visited with them 5 years ago when we went to New Zealand. They were at the Reed's house or at the Robin's house. And this man wanted, we were trying to convert this woman. And this man was trying to get his wife to drink so she'd get drunk and have sex with a man in front of him. Boy, you're talking about opening the eyes of a little old boy from Alabama. I'm telling you that. To think that kind of world would... But see, that's no surprise in our day. Wine is a mocker. And we stop and we think about it and then we just ignore it. It's as though God said not one thing. David has a list of 80 verses in the Bible about drinking, about alcohol. One of the things that he uses it, but just to ask somebody when they're asking about drinking, say, would you read all 80 of these verses and tell me what God thinks about drinking? Isn't that amazing? What verse is there in the Bible that indicates that drinking is okay? Oh, Jesus turned water into wine. Well, I've got to understand the Greek word there. That's a common word. In English, man, wine means fermented. Grape juice means unfermented. The Greeks had one word to describe both of them. And Jesus made, I want you to listen to this, 180 gallons of intoxicating drink so that wedding feast would be better. You really want to go to that page? They're already drunk. I mean, if that's going to be alcoholic, instead they're well filled, as the Greek would indicate. And here these folks already staggering drunk, and Jesus made 180 gallons of the best wine they had, best wine he could make, so they could keep right on drinking. Yes, Helen.
Why did Paul tell Timothy to take a little bit of wine?
Yes, great question. Why did Paul say, take a little bit of wine for your stomach's sake? We're going to get to that on the last slide, but let's talk about it right here. There's only two reasons, Paul's a medical doctor. You know, when Paul told Timothy, he said, drink no longer water, but a little wine for your stomach, for your stomach's sake, and you're often off sickness or whatever that phrase is there. Infirmity, yes. Why did Paul do that? There's only two reasons. One is he's a doctor. And so, Luke, I understand you got some problems, stomach problems. You know, take ibuprofen 4 times a day. I'm giving you medical advice. The Holy Spirit of God saying to Timothy, Timothy, you got problems. And by the way, if you'll take 2 aspirins and call me in the morning, everything will be all right. That's one possibility. And I only know the one other possibility. And that Timothy would not drink wine without divine permission. That's only two possibilities. There may be one. If there is one, I need to hear it. But here's Timothy. He's been raised by Lois and Eunice, devout people, devout servants of God. He's been around Paul. And, he's known the life and the teaching of Paul. And so Paul says, Timothy, you're sick. Take the medication. And yes. All right. And the word I heard more than anything is the cause of something, right? Say what you're saying? That's right. Yeah. And that is so insightful. And you and I need to have a realization of the fact that you've got to deal with those difficult passages. But you take a little wine because you're sick allows me to just be a part of that which every other verse in the Bible says stay away from. Isn't that amazing? And Jesus turned water into wine. What did he turn it into? Well, there's only two possibilities. And the Bible says in Habakkuk under Judaism, and that's, you know, woe to him that puts the cup to his neighbor that he may make him drunk. Isn't that amazing? That's Habakkuk 2:15, I think it is. But you got all these Old Testament verses and everything, and we need to have an appreciation of it. Wine is a mocker. You're talking to your kids about drinking. You need to say this is what it's talking about. By the way, I think it is interesting that the NIV, and it may be one of the few translations, that several places in the Old Testament, it has the word beer instead of the word wine. I find that even more remarkable. That here is a translation. It's not a word-for-word translation per se, but it tries to state in modern terms exactly what the Greek says, and several times. Just if you got your computer program, just go to get the open up the NIV and do a search in there and look for the word beer. It's in there several times. And so when we think about wine, we used to think about folks, you know, that really drink the hard stuff, the expensive stuff. You know, I guess gin's the hard stuff, and beer's the common stuff, and wine's the expensive stuff. But it's not that expensive stuff anymore. But you think about all that happens. Let's get to chapter 21, verse 17, and then we'll get to the major section. Chapter 21, verse 17. He who loves pleasure will be a poor man, and he who loves wine and oil will not be rich. You ever see anybody come out of Winn-Dixie, Publix, and they got 4 bottles of stuff and very little food? I think of a situation that I've known that trying to help a person with their drinking problem, and I said, just quit buying the stuff. Sit down and figure out what it's costing you. It can lead, it's a proverb that leads to poverty. You get addicted, can't show up to work, no promotion in work, life is ruined, and a whole bunch of things that are in that respect. All right, let's get to chapter 23. Verse 20 and 21. Hear, my son. That's in verse 19, still talking to his son. Hear, my son. Be wise and guide your heart in the way. Do not mix with wine bibbers or with gluttonous eaters of meat. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. Do not mix with wine bibbers. That's amazing. Why? Because of all the problems it brings. Because of all the problems it brings. Think about drug rape, where the drug is alcohol. Think about the partying that goes on, the things that happen in bars and things of that nature. Wonder how I can get her to sleep with me tonight. I think I'll just buy her 2 or 3 more drinks. And the Bible says you can't do that. Why? It's mockery. And for me to find my pleasure in life around times and people where people are drinking is fraught with danger. And we've got to have that appreciation and have that understanding of it. We got to get to verse 23, though. When you get to verse 23, not 23, it's 29. Who has woes? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? You ever read the warning on the side of a can of beer? Ever read the warnings on the side of a bottle of wine? Danger, hazardous. This may cause woe. Drinking this can cause sorrow, contentions, complaints, and wounds without cause. That's rather funny in America, where you got to put hazard warnings on the side of everything. You ever get your medicine? Are you that kind of person that reads the side effects before you take the medicine and then say, I'm not going to do that? We had a lady from New Zealand who's here, and she's watching TV commercials, and I know we got laws that say that, and they do this all the time, do they not? That they talk about this great medication that'll help arthritis or help some other disease, and then it says, you know, but, and then lists all the side effects, and the lady from New Zealand said, man, I wouldn't take that medicine, my life depended on it. Look on the side of the bottle that you have, and God's label may cause contentions, woes, sorrow, complaints, and you being beaten up, wounds without cause. That's God's warning. That's not some old-fashioned preacher thing that comes out of, you know, the ancient past. It comes from heaven itself. Who has these things? And we need to read that, lest I forget it. Mike and Gene Archer are not here. Gene told me of an occasion one time when she said to a person who had a drinking problem, said, before you take that can of beer and start drinking it, would you have a good look at it? It has no hands that can grab your nose and jump itself up and pour it down your throat. It has no feet so that it decides it's in the store and it walks to your house. And it has no arms so they can push you down on the floor and make you drink that stuff. Isn't that graphic? knowing contentions, woes, sorrows, wounds without cause. And we say, I don't believe that. Every now and then I've heard people say, I don't believe what Dan or David say, teach about drinking. I hope it's not Dan or David saying it. This is the God of heaven. Who is this individual that has this? In addition to it, he has redness of eyes. And he says, those who linger long at wine, those who go in search for mixed drink. And then this divine admonition, do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. What do they do when they bring the wine to your table? Pour it in your little cup there and you swirl it around and smell of it. I'm not sure exactly why you would smell of it, you know, and you may sip it and you nod your head yes. Proverbs, don't look at it. If that's what it's all about, that's the wrong way of looking at it. I think it's rather ironic, the power of the media. You ever watch any older movies and see how much smoking there is in older movies? You ever notice movies, sometimes a movie that always have Fords in it, Chevrolets. Where's that come from? You ever watch movies where there's a lot of drinking? Do you know why there's Coke and not Pepsi on that table? And in that movie? I think it's rather interesting. Nick Saban, when he does a news conference, you may not notice, obviously had a bottle of Coke sitting right up there. He comes in for after game, there's a bottle of Coke. Why is that there? If I can just brainwash people subliminally. And you're right. You're absolutely right, Gary. You know, where's all that coming from? Subliminal suggestion that this is a way of life. And folks, our young people, our kids, those of you who are younger, are growing up in a society where on not HBO or Showtime or one of those channels you pay extra for, but there are men kissing each other on television right now. Isn't that amazing? What?
Cartoons.
Yes, sir. Yes, Chuck, comments. That's right. But Chuck, you see it. You see it every day. You go to a place where there's some man's beat up his wife and what's all over the house? I mean, it's there. Driving down the highway, what's in the front seat of that wrecked car that you go and pull that person out of? It's there. Yes, Helen.
Alcohol's a depressant.
Well, yes.
Take a drink. You're going to be more depressed.
All right. But there is that other aspect. Yes, it is depressant, but there's that other aspect. And that's escape. You know, it's the only way I can get away from the problems of life. And then, see, you can take all of what we're saying about wine and talk about medication, talk about pills and everything. Did I read this and is this right? I heard this. No. 86,000 people last year in America were killed by Oxycontin, Percocet.
Yeah, really? Yeah.
I read it.
I believe
you. You know, isn't that amazing?
Pills are bad. Yeah, but if you need them,
it mocks. It mocks. And so he says, don't look at it when it's swirling. Well, how are we going to look at it? We've got to hurry, okay? At the last, it bites like a serpent, stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things, and your hearts will utter perverse things. And somewhere I thought in Solomon, in the book, it says, your eyes will see strange women. I'm not sure if that's right or not. And yes, you'll be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, like one who's at the top of the mast saying, they've struck me, but it didn't hurt. They've beat me, I didn't feel that. When shall I awake that I may seek another drink? And that expression, another drink, just about says it all. Isn't that amazing? We've got to listen, yes. Yes, yes. Let's look at one more because I want to make sure we cover it. 31, chapter 31. It is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes intoxicating drink, lest they drink and forget the law. Hello, ain't a drink going on in Washington? Isn't that amazing? 31:4 is where I'm reading. Now then, he says, verse 6, give strong drink to him who is perishing and wine to those who are bitter of heart. And I really believe that's talking about the medicinal part of medication, of drinking. Like Jesus on the cross, they gave him wine to drink. He refused it. Why? Wine belongs to that man that has a bitter heart, and in that sense, it has to do with medicine. It may do to have with the fact if a fellow's going to drink, just give it to a drunk because he's going to drink anyway. But it appears to me that some people come to this verse and say, well, it's all right. Well, it's not for those in authority. And folks, we are in authority in our home. We are in authority in the workplace. We are in authority in the community. And it is not for us to drink. Now then, to say it again, this is not Dan talking. Divine Proverbs of Wisdom. One final question. Does drinking war against the souls of people? And when you answer that, Peter says, abstain from from fleshly lust which war against the soul. Answer the question, does wine war against the soul? Then my response to that divine instruction is to abstain from it. That's not Dan. You answer the first question, and then you got to deal with the verb that goes with it. Abstain from fleshly lust that war against the soul. Thank you very much. All right.